call is now being recorded.
Hey, this is Michael Joy from HorrorNews.net, and you're listening to us on the Totally Driven Entertainment Radio Network, which now you can hear not only on Blog Talk Radio, but on iTunes and Google Play. So some pretty cool stuff. Today, it is my distinct pleasure to talk to my friend and a great director, David Borbor. David, of course, directed the horror movie shot right here in South Jersey, A Place in Hell. And it's now available, well, it's available everywhere. Is that right, David?
Yeah, well, it's actually available on, you can pick it up in the store at Walmart across the country on DVD. Also, Target, you can order it, the DVD, at Target, Barnes & Noble, Best Buy, and a bunch of other retail stores. But its digital release is very big. You can order it to buy and to rent on Amazon, as well as Xbox, PlayStation platforms, Hulu, on demand. I believe it's on Fios on demand, Comcast on demand, all the on demand stations you could think of. Fandango Now, to name a few, and Google Play is also offering it as well. So that's to name a few. I'm sure there's more out there. Those are the ones. Oh, also iTunes.
Okay, so like I said, everywhere. It's it really is. I mean, you got a fantastic release for this movie, and well-deserved, too.
Oh, thank you.
But let's circle back real quick. So for those listening who don't really know the premise, could you take us through what the movie's about a little bit?
Yes. The film is about a group of filmmakers that head out to a fright farm in the dead of winter to make a horror film for their film class. Little do they know that a serial killer has taken refuge there. At the same time, a homicide detective who has been searching for this serial killer is finally closing in on the case. So the film culminates in, you know, all these different storylines coming together for a grand finale, which I don't want to tell you. To see it.
Yeah, no spoilers here. That's fine. So
we have Lewis Smith plays Detective McGinnis, who is of Heavenly Kid, Buckaroo Banzai, Wyatt Earp. You'll recognize Lewis Smith if you see him. He was in North and South as well. And a multitude of movies. Nori Victoria also stars in the film, and she was in films like The Choice, People vs. O.J. Simpson, a television show. She's got a lot of new films on the horizon as well. She's our main star. She's plays Nicole Hart, a young woman struggling with the past, who teams up with the group of filmmaker students, as well as Atif Lanier, who is an American Gangster and Invincible, to name a few. So those are our three big stars.
Well, I mean, that really does sound like a very cool cast. So I guess kind of steps me in the direction to ask, how did you go about, getting such a cool cast together?
Well, I had worked with Nori previously. I had met her through a friend, and she had worked on a trailer that I was doing to promote a film called The Underground, and she had agreed to come in, and that was my first contact with her. So we got our chance to work together there. And then a couple years later, you know, that's when this would come about, and I asked her if she would come from LA and be in the film. And I told her, you know, I was writing the film with her in mind, as well as I had worked on a short film with Lewis Smith in LA, called The Violin, through another friend of ours, Craig Ahrens, who had introduced me to Lewis Smith. And that's when Lewis and I first started working together. And then I also had to kind of like ask him if he would come work on the film, because it was a SAG, you know, it was a SAG, you know, low budget film.
Right.
That, you know, that they would have to make the sacrifice to come out and work in a very cold climate, while making the film.
Okay. So a very cold.
They were all about it.
A very cold climate. That speaks very lightly for the conditions that you actually filmed in. You guys were, if I'm not mistaken, and I've talked to you in the past about this, I mean, we had a pretty nice snowfall, and it was pretty damn cold when you guys were filming this, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, it definitely added to the overall look of the film, and it, and just the feeling in general, because it kind of like, you know, in order to create that kind of snow in a studio environment would have cost millions,
right,
you know, to create that look. So,
nature gave it to you for free.
Yeah, it did. And but then it presented a lot of logistical problems, but you know, with a good production team, we were able to overcome, you know, a lot of that, and the general enthusiasm people had about doing what they love really helped us, you know, make it through the 18-day shoot.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, I was there for the premiere, and it really is a wonderful film. You know, I've read other reviews. I've personally reviewed it, and I mean, you're getting a lot of pretty good critical acclaim. And you know, it's pretty cool, because you know, when you tell me that you ran into, you know, production problems because of the weather, because of the elements, it reminds me, and we were just, you know, off the air talking about directors like Steven Spielberg and George Lucas. And it seems like, you know, every great film has had problems. I mean, you go back to, all the problems Spielberg had with Jaws, and even George Lucas had with Star Wars. You know, there's always been tons of like obstacles and, you know, stuff that practically shuts the you know, project down. But, you know, as, I guess, as a filmmaker, you have to kind of think on your feet and know how to, you know, overcome those obstacles.
Yeah, we actually, you know, had to go through and, you know, decide what was going to stay and what was going to go based on the schedule and based on, you know, how you originally conceive something. You write the script for it, and then you get your cast together and your group of people, and you kind of find this dynamic going. And what originally turned out to be more of a serious tone turned into have this fun element to it. While still being scary and serious, it has a lot of elements of comedy in it. So then to balance the tone with the comedy and horror, really was a challenge in the editing room.
Right.
Which we actually had the help of a friend of mine, John Pogue, who's done some really amazing films, you know, U.S. Marshals, Skulls. He was the executive produced Fast and the Furious. He helped behind the scenes a little bit on this film, which he gets a special thanks for. And our post-production sound was very good. We had Michael Ganzi and Mark Orton, and Michael Ganzi did Good Will Hunting, Finding Forrester, and we had Mark Orton who did Box Trolls and Nebraska. So he had, right. They had done some really high profile projects. So our sound, you know, sound, you know, is a problem. Can always be a challenge to get good quality sound in. And in a film of this nature, for the level of sound we have, I'm very, very happy with that. You know, how everything turned out there as well.
Yeah, no, I would be too. No, without a doubt. Do you think it is more difficult to direct a straight, serious horror movie or a horror movie with elements of comedy? I mean, what's your opinion on that?
I think it's more difficult to direct a movie, a horror movie, with elements of comedy in it, because you're always not sure what'll play and what won't play, and will the comedy take away too much from the horror?
Yeah.
You know? And so I think when you're doing a straight toned piece, I think it's a lot easier because you don't have to worry about that getting in the way. You know, but I think when you're dealing with the comedy aspect, I think it, in order to make that work, I think the tonality has to be constantly looked at, constantly checked. And that's on set and in the editing room.
Right. Yeah, no, I would have to imagine, especially in the editing room, definitely.
Yeah, I had a great editor who worked with me. His name's Muftar Von Rama, and, you know, he came in as my assistant, and, you know, by halfway through editing, I realized he was such a valuable asset to the process, I made him a full-blown editor.
Yeah. Okay,
yeah.
So, quick question. Thinking back, you know, of, you know, we did an interview when, I don't know, it had to be about probably 2 years ago or so now, where I had you on the phone and the entire cast. Or not the entire cast, but a lot of the cast. It was a fun interview.
Nori and Lewis and Ed Cuff.
Yeah. So, I mean, there was that interview, and I'm sure you've done other interviews, and I'm sure you've talked about different things about the film. Now, is there anything, any hidden tidbit, anything you can reach in your back pocket and dig up that you haven't talked about yet about the film? Any nuggets of truth, or, you know?
Yes, I can say this, which is kind of in retrospect, I really, at the time I was doing it, I didn't realize it, but this is the first film where you have an African-American heroine and an African-American antagonist. So your protagonist and your antagonist are both African American in a serial killer movie that contains all these other elements. And I don't remember any other movie besides Candyman, but Candyman, the antagonist was a white female.
Yeah. I mean, the first thing that came to mind was also Candyman, but you're right. It was just Tony Todd, you know, as far as being the villain there. But, yeah, I can't think of anything off the top of my head either. So that's a pretty cool piece of information. and definitely, definitely noteworthy, without a doubt.
But at the same time, it is a film that is open to everyone, but I think the African-American film community at large would find this film interesting in that they've never seen this type of film.
I would definitely have to agree with you. And the thing is, like, when, you know, just, I would have never thought of that on my own. And just because,
and
like,
I
you watched
the... And I never thought of it, really, at all, while I was...
No.
It was just like, you know, I'm really good friends with this actress. She's really good. Ateef is really good. But also, Ateef is based off of Harrison Graham, who was an African-American serial killer.
Yeah.
So that piece was already in place. But
right.
For Nori... character Nicole Hart to play the protagonist with the kids being like she's the leader of the kids in a way because she's a graduate student and they're all undergraduate students, so she kind of leads them through and kind of takes charge when she needs to in the film. I just didn't think of it until afterwards, and it just reminds me of, you know, some other element of the film that I don't think has been mentioned in any other interview.
No, and it's a pretty amazing afterthought when you actually think about it. And like I mentioned, like just watching the movie, it wouldn't come to mind unless you really kind of thought about it, because, you know, I mean, everyone did such a great job on the film, you know, but when you actually think about it, it is kind of geared, not solely towards an African-American audience, but, it definitely opens up some doors where they would, you know, certainly enjoy this, because of that fact.
Yeah, and I think and I think, you know, that aspect is just one of many that make it different,
makes
the film different than other films out there. And the tonality shifts again, like I said, you know, to go from laughing one minute to like horror the next to back to even keel back to while the story's still unfolding. You know what I mean? And, you know, like, I believe in, like, a slow burn. And a lot of, you know, filmmakers today and, you know, different people in the industry feel like you need to, like, smash it in their face right away. And I don't think that's necessarily what you need to do. I think a good film can be a slow burn. And I think people still can appreciate that kind of film. That kind of leads to a better ending rather than having multiple endings early on. You know what I mean?
No, I trust
like,
me, I do.
Where's this film going? Where's this film going? Like this, your sensations get assaulted so early in the film that what happens later in the film becomes less important because you've already played your big cards.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, no
rather
doubt.
Than kind of let it, you know, let it go throughout. Now, I would like to mention also some of the companies involved
Please,
in the film.
Yeah.
If that's all right.
Absolutely.
We, to start off, we had our main funding came through Cufflink Productions, and the two other companies involved were Frame Level Films, which is my company, and Sonny Velozzi's and Robert Bizek's company, Don't Go There Productions, out of Philadelphia. Those are the other companies, and Cufflink is owned by Ed Cuff, and Michael Rutan. And now, actually, Tierney Borbor is actually one of the producers there as well, which is my sister.
I was wondering.
She did such a good job, I guess, on this film for Cufflink that they ended up hiring her to work with them full time.
Nice. Okay.
And another person behind the scenes I'd like to mention is Mark Elson, who really, from the beginning, had tons of great ideas when it came to marketing and building up the marketing with the Facebook page and so many other things, ideas that he had brought forth. To the point that he actually introduced me to you initially.
He did. Yes, I recall.
And, you know, got that ball rolling. The other companies involved, there's a few. There's Industry Works, which is the foreign sales agent, and there's Anchor Bay, which is Canada. Anchor Bay Canada handled the DVDs in Canada. There's Synchronized Films, which is handling the U.S. distribution, and Cinedigm, another company that's handling the DVDs, and I believe they're handling the hard retail merchandise. And Synchronized is responsible for the U.S. release, which is, you see how well, you know, and their group over there, Alex Cohen, the president of Cinedigm, of Synchronized, is did a real great job. And I just don't want to leave anyone out here. I think I've pretty much covered it.
they've all done a great job. They've all done a fantastic job. I mean, because we circle back to the beginning of our conversation where, you know, I mentioned that it is out everywhere, you know, both retail and video on demand and everywhere. So, I mean, that's a really cool thing to see, like, a local to us in South Jersey, horror movie, that gets such a national release. There's something to be said for that.
And, you know, they're still, going to be, releasing, it's being shown in, Canada, it's on iTunes in Canada, Anchor Bay, DVDs, you know, in Canada, and then it's got its U.S., but there's still, the world is still open.
The world is open.
the world is still open for distribution, and Industry Works will be handling the rest of the world at this point.
Fantastic. That's cool. So how about, let's touch on the future. After A Place in Hell and, being released all over the place, what's next for David Borbor? What do you see yourself doing in the horizon?
Well, I have a couple ideas. I have a drama called The Purity Code, which is about a brother and sister growing up in a very harsh religious environment. And they kind of are, it's a coming of age film where they have to kind of discover their identity amidst losing their father and their abusive alcoholic mother and, you know, the whole world being run by this church. And the decisions they make and the consequences of those decisions. Have another project, that is kind of, I don't want to talk too much about it because it hasn't been, you know, publicized too much and it's still under wraps. It's called The Exchange Student, which is a which is an interesting little tale. Again, it's in the horror genre. It's a very mysterious film about an exchange student that comes from London, and some things go wrong.
All right, you know, don't want to give too much away.
And I have another supernatural thriller idea that kind of ties in the a child who goes missing, and basically the mother that has been searching for that child, the local police, and a serial killer who goes missing. And that's more in the vein of Silence of the Lambs and Sixth Sense. More on that level.
So there's no shortage of ideas, basically.
No,
that's cool. That's cool because, I mean, I know after everyone sees A Place in Hell, you know, their heads are going to be turning and people are going to be wondering what is next from this great filmmaker. So just want to try to give them a glimpse of the future if we can. So that's cool. So there are three interesting ideas that hopefully get flushed out and, you know, made into feature films.
And I was offered to direct another film, which is called Dead Afterlife. But we're still in negotiations on that one. And that's a very interesting film that combines many different elements of a few genres, and is going to be a downright entertaining film.
Well, again,
I think I must mention that as well.
No, very cool. I think I've heard of that movie. So, without a doubt, you know, your schedule is going to be second to none. So that's certainly pretty cool. Now, are there any final thoughts, or words to your fans or anyone for that matter, you know, before we wrap things up?
Yeah, we, a group of us are going to be, promoting at Chiller, April 27th to the 29th. Some of the cast is going to be there. I believe Atif is going to be there, Krista Lobel, and perhaps Brooke Storms. Is going to be there, and I may be there, depending on if schedule permits.
Okay. All right. That sounds like a plan. If I can, I will make it down. So there you go, Chiller, which, I mean, if you're in this part of the country, you know, you've heard of Chiller. It's the, you know, granddaddy of all conventions, so it's a good one. All right, ladies and gentlemen, that's David Borbor. Well, he made one hell of a film called A Place in Hell, and I'll put links down to different places where you can actually purchase it. You know, if you walk around with your eyes open, you're going to see it because it literally is everywhere.
And I will say the film was shot in 5K. So if you get an opportunity to get the film in HD, which is available on Amazon and iTunes, and you're able to watch it on your television in full HD, you're going to see the quality even that much more. It still looks good in standard def, but the HD really pops. So
there you go. Tidbits from the filmmaker. Definitely check it out in HD if you can. All right. Thanks, David.
Thank you, Michael.